Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes,
yippee,
is presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL.
Now your hosts,
Lauren Brooks,
Donna Murphy,
and Lauren Rude.
Sounded like a very happy Yannick Ngakoue there in Andrew Gibson's update for the top of the hour. Welcome into Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. As the intro said, Lauren Rue, Lauren Brooks, and Donna Murphy here with you until 8 o'clock. And today began OTAs. It was every bit as warm as it looked like outside. It felt about a bazillion degrees. I didn't go to the gym today, but I felt like I sweated enough in that nearly two-hour time period that I would give myself the day off.
It was a lot of sweating, but I always come back to there are a lot of people who work outside in this heat all summer long.
And so they shouldn't complain, is that what you're saying?
Also, yes, that's what I'm saying. they work in some people in when it's raining and
right.
Some people when it's really cold. And so I can go and stand and or sit on the bleachers for a couple hours. But there was point standing on the turf, and I was wearing flip-flops because obviously I'm not going to ruin my tan by wearing shoes out there.
Absolutely not.
Obviously. And so, but I was standing there, and my feet, like if you had put a thermometer on my feet on that turf, I think it would have been 120 degrees.
Yes, it was warm. Those and the bleachers you sit in, you're right. I mean, it's like that's the one of the hottest places to be, too, because of that. I don't know. I feel like you're sitting like on the roof of a car.
Yeah, the metal certainly reflects the heat. But the good part about, so you can either stand in the end zone or you can come and be in the bleachers area to actually watch the practice.
Right.
And to me, it's way better to be in the bleachers no matter how hot it is because I
can
actually see what's
mm-hmm.
going on. Otherwise, all the guys that aren't participating in that current drill or that current formation, they're all kind of blocking your vision. And so I always go to the bleachers and I love watching practice. I
do.
Yes. I'm honestly sad on Thursday I can't make it. And I'm honestly really sad that I'm not going to be there. Not that I'm necessarily going to learn a whole lot from each one, but I love everything about it.
Yeah.
Why? Like what do you like about it?
Well, I love, obviously now that there's a new quarterback in town, I love watching the offense develop. I want to see so much from not just Foles, but the receivers. And I was pleased today with the pass catchers, the receivers, and mainly tight end Josh Oliver, the rookie. But I love everything about football. Like, I think I would have, if I was a boy, I think I would have played football. I think it would have been so much fun. And I say that from the standpoint of I'm actually not that tough, so maybe that's not how it would have all played out. But I love drills. Every time there's been a women's football 101, whether mm-hmm. the Jaguars held it, whether University of Florida held it, I've tried to attend. And I love going through those drills. I really, truly love watching all of it develop. And I love hearing the coaches yell at them. And even the techniques. I may not fully understand why they're saying certain things. But like
right.
today, speaking of Yannick Ngakoue, the defensive line was doing a drill. And I heard one of the coaches yell, "Chin up, Yannick, chin up." And I don't know at what point he should have put the chin up, but I was like, oh, that's good to know. Yannick needs to keep his chin up. I'll watch that next time. Again, it doesn't mean a whole lot, but I just love being around it. I love all of it.
What was your favorite drill in the football 101 that you got to do? And where did you do it? Did you do it in Gainesville?
I did.
Okay.
My mom and I went down in 2005, so the first year that Urban had taken over, and we did those. Because it's been so long for those drills, I remember being on the field, but I vividly remember for my 30th birthday here with the Jaguars, they did a women's football 101, and they did a lot more of the actual on-field stuff. It was an absolute blast. First of all, I was god-awful at the field goals. Because
most
I played soccer.
Are.
Well, and because I played soccer, I was always taught to drive the ball, right, with a
right.
certain part of my foot. Well, kicking field goals is the exact opposite. You want that thing to go skyrocketing. Well, in soccer, that would have been terrible. Well, so I line up and I line drive the football and it hits the guy's junk. And so he's like, out of the line, lady, out of the line. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. So then I get back in line thinking like he won't remember me. And so I wanted to take my another turn and I get up to the front of the line. He's like, no, you're done. But a friend of mine made two field goals, so I was proud of her. But my favorite part, two other drills were really fun. One, and this is more, again, embarrassing, we did the running back drill where you have to hold the ball high and tight, and mm-hmm. then you have to put your feet quickly through kind of the tires, mm-hmm. right? And so the guy told us, he's like, if you don't hold the football properly while you're going through, I'm going to smack the ball out and all the other people in line are going to scream at you, you suck. And here I am like, I can play football. I got this. I played powder puff. So I'm at the front of the line and the guy's able to knock it out. Because now I start concentrating on my feet and the ball drops, right? My elbow drops. And so that's obviously a bad thing. You can get fumbled. And so the guy knocks it out. And all of my friends, of course, are the loudest because they know how I am. And they're like, you suck, Lauren. You suck. And the guy's like, see, how does it feel? This is what, you know, running backs feel like. So that was embarrassing. But I did. There was a guy, an offensive lineman here out of Ohio State. I think he was undrafted. His name was Michael Brewster. And he did the offensive line pad drills with the women. And that was by far my favorite. I just got to run and like hit it as hard as I possibly could over and over. And that was the last drill of the whole night. And that was great because he let me do extra reps. I was like, I want to keep going. I want to keep going even after everybody else was done.
This was your 30th birthday?
This was my 30th birthday, yeah. And I had a bunch of girlfriends go. And
that actually sounds fun.
It was a blast.
And did you go out afterwards and have cocktails or anything like
that? You know, it was a weeknight, so I don't think so. Yeah, I probably did that. Which, yeah, ice baths are a whole other thing. If you've never been in one,
no, it's no terrible. Joke. Yeah.
But yeah, I love all of it. So anyway.
Well, if you had by 6:05, we'd have a junk reference, then you're a big winner on your bingo card. All right. Well, the
what
OT.
What did you learn today from the OTAs?
A lot. From OT? I thought you meant from this conversation. I learned a lot about you in a very short amount of time. OTAs, look, it's shorts and helmets. It's can the guys get out there and really stay healthy and somebody not run into somebody else or take a play too far and knock somebody down and get somebody hurt. Somebody was back on punt return stuff, and a loose football bounced. I can't remember who it bounced out in front of.
Well, I think it was Dredrick Snelson, if I remember correctly. And in the punt drills, they are holding a ball while the machine boots a ball at them. And then their job is at a certain point to let go of that first ball and then catch the other incoming ball.
And he threw the one at his own feet. And then
he didn't throw it far enough. Yeah. So, they were yelling at him, watch out for the ball, watch out for the ball, while guys are rushing at them. That to me is such a scary, punt returning is such a scary thing.
Absolutely. That to me would be the most terrifying thing to be a part of during a football game. I would not want to be a punt returner.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I think, if you look back and watch that Marquise Lee injury from last year, there are times that a wide receiver getting blown up in the middle of the field
is also bad as well.
Is also scary, but yeah.
But this is like people are running as fast as they can, a million miles an hour at you, and it's like running into head-on traffic.
Right, absolutely.
Running head-on into traffic.
Yeah, but yeah, I thought, you know, the fact that Yannick Ngakoue is here is such a terrific sign for this football team. I didn't necessarily expect him to show up for this. Did you, Donna?
I didn't expect him not to. I wasn't as surprised as everybody is because he doesn't come off as a diva. I know that it's his last year in the contract, but he doesn't come off that way. He's never really spoken about it. You know, it's been quiet. Everybody else has been speaking about it, which then puts it in his mind. And now, you know, and the question came up, which I thought was fun with the response. But no, I wasn't surprised at all. Like next year, if this happens with Ramsey, that'll be a different story.
Right. And obviously Jalen's going to skip this part of the training. I loved Ngakoue's quote. He was asked if $100 million in a contract extension is about what he would be worth. And, you know, because they had been asking him, are you watching the numbers? And he said, yeah, I log on the computer and I can find the numbers too. And I wanted to be like, don't you have a phone? But either way, he said, that money don't mean nothing, but I know what I'm worth. So it's a sentence that while the first part of it makes you think like he's going to play no matter what, the second part of it is like, hold on. I do deserve to be paid a lot of money.
Well, and Hacker and I talked about this. We did a kind of OTA wrap-up on Facebook Live that you can still check out on the 1010XL Facebook page, that he's taking a risk and showing up without being paid, essentially, for that contract. And we just mentioned guys that can get hurt during these OTAs, and then you find yourself hurt in one of these before you sign your name on the dotted line. You find yourself in a position where you're possibly kicking yourself for not holding out. But then the other side of that is the fact that he's here to be part of this team. And, of course, he's going to play and all these things. And hopefully they get it all worked out before training camp gets started. And then everybody's happy about the situation.
Yeah, and certainly he deserves to be paid. And they know that.
Right.
I don't think that's the issue. I think it's finding a way to figure out the money. And they may have to talk to other players about renegotiating their deals in order to get it to happen. But I'd like to think, and I know this is not how business works, but I'd like to think that even if Yannick got hurt on Thursday, let's say, that the Jaguars would find a way to take care of him. Yeah. But obviously that's the pie in the sky way of looking at it. And I think if I was a player, I would be here, even with that, you know, injury potential kind of hanging out there as a is potentially a bad cloud over the OTAs. But I still think I would be here, especially if I had had that much success that even with one injury, you're still probably going to end up making a lot of money even after the recovery.
Well, Doug Marrone met with the media today before OTAs got started. And, of course, one of the topic of conversations is how was Nick Foles fitting in with his new teammates?
Nick set a great example with, you know, hey, listen, I'm just focusing on getting to know my teammates. That's the first thing that you need to do. So, you know, these players, you know, that are coming in, or even if you're a player that's here, you know, you want to be able to open yourself up to get to know one another. And I think that's the most important thing. I think from then it goes by what you do as far as example of how you handle your business. And then you have to really, you know, continually, you know, try to reach out and try to touch all the different elements of a team.
I think apparent today, Lauren, I don't know, I'm sure you saw this as well. He and Chris Conley hooked up a couple of times throughout some of the drills. They played together in Kansas City for a short amount of time. So maybe that becomes, again, this is so early on and we're making assumptions and guesses about stuff, but that's part of seeing what you see out there and then coming up with some ideas. But
well, and Conley should have looked good because Westbrook wasn't out there today.
Right.
And Marquise Lee is out there but not able to participate yet.
And speaking of Didi, for those who've missed it, he is expected to be there Thursday. They're in communications with each other, so there's no drama there. And, of course, Jalen not expected to be there, but apparently that's also fine as well that they're on the same page. The Telvin question has been brought up again. Doug Marrone really kind of just is – sounds like he's done talking about Telvin and the situation with him. And no Instagram post to report of this week. I feel like every week by the time we get to Tuesday, there's something regarding his situation with the Jaguars or just his overall health in general that we talk about. But he's been kind of quiet on that front. So I wouldn't expect there to be any more news. It sounds like they're moving on without him until they can find out whatever is next for his future. Yannick, we mentioned him. Doug Marrone also weighed in on the contract negotiations for Yannick Ngakoue.
You know, when it comes down to contracts, I've never, ever been involved. From my standpoint, so everyone knows, if someone will say, hey, do you like this player? Do you want him back? And it's usually yes or no. And then once it goes to the other side, the contractual stuff, you know, that's something for Dave and Tom. I really stay out of that because it's a tough situation, you know, for a coach to be in.
No surprise there, right?
I mean, it doesn't make sense for him to be involved in that.
No, not really. Well, and he has made it very clear in the past before, not specifically to contracts, but other player personnel issues, that he just coaches football. Mm-hmm. So he leaves it at that. All right. Doug Marrone, in terms of 90 guys being out there, there's a lot of bodies out there. Cutting it down to 53, something they'll do over the summer. Can you really figure out your roster this early on?
No one's really going to make the team now, but you can get, you know, released from the team if, you know, you're not following rules, or if you're on the ground, or you're putting people in potential of getting injured, or, you know, maybe you're not picking things up the way we think, you know, that you should. You know, those are the things that happen now. No one's going to, you know, all of a sudden after this period of time, whether it's this or the mandatory minicamp, you know, we're going to turn around and say, oh, we got to change this because we saw this happen during this time of year.
I heard Leon Searcy say today on Lunch with Leon on XL Primetime that one of the worst things rookies can do is almost go, it's like this fine balance and going too hard at practice where you take out a vet or you go too hard on a play and you get somebody injured, usually find yourself on the next bus out. And at the same time, on the reverse side of that, if you're not up there leading the pack in some of these running drills or putting forth the maximum effort, even if the, you know, the vets are like, hey, rookie, you need to slow down, you're killing us here, then you find yourself kind of in that limbo area. He then also mentioned how important it is for guys to show up, rookies especially, to show up with, like, breakfast and stuff in the meeting rooms and make sure that everybody's taken care of, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think you give 100% in all of the drills, and then during the teamwork, you certainly are putting forth effort, but don't you dare run into someone too hard. I mean, you know, there's not really tackling going on out there today. But make sure you're in the right position, you're listening to your coaches, and you have high energy, even though, again, this heat is no joke. You know, for the guys, I mentioned Josh Oliver earlier, the tight end. I thought he looked great today. He's playing it the first time, you know, at least that I can think of, or I don't know his exact schedule from last year, but he spent 4 years in California at San Jose State. I'm going to guess they didn't play in Florida that often. So this for him, you know, in California, this weather is nothing like it is here with this humidity. And it's hotter right now than it certainly has been the last few OTAs. So I props to all them out there.
PGA Championship, Brooks Koepka made headlines by obviously winning, but he also made headlines by dissing his girlfriend. We get into that right after this.
It's been a tough day, but now can enjoy it as that starts left turn, swords the hole, and in. And Brooks Koepka wins the 101st PGA Championship, his fourth major championship.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Of course, that was Brooks Koepka winning the putt, that he made to win the PGA Championship over the weekend. It was an interesting PGA Championship. There were some golf fans behaving badly and a diss of a kiss from his girlfriend.
New Yorkers, what else are we going to say?
Diss of a kiss.
Diss of a kiss from Jenna Sims. All right, let's start first with the golf fans behaving badly. Screaming DJ or chanting DJ, essentially when Koepka missed a putt. Is that what it was? That was the scene, correct?
Right.
Does anybody have a problem with this?
Yeah, they're rude. They're all rude. Everybody up there that attended, you are rude. And we should not expect anything else because it's in New York. Sorry, but it's true. It is very true. The screaming while he's in his swing,
right?
Absolutely ridiculous. But I do not, not that I don't have a problem with it, but I understand because of DJ in the Gretzky family, I would figure all New Yorkers would want to rally with the Gretzky, you know, family. But yeah, they're just a bunch of rude morons. And other golfers have come out and spoken about how bad they were. So yeah, no.
Get real.
Come on now.
Well, and I heard they also were saying some things about Jenna Sims, his girlfriend.
Not surprising.
That's also completely inappropriate. I think to lose sight of the fact that Koepka was able to win despite all that is to not give him enough credit for what he did. He had to play with Tiger Woods in the first two rounds of this golf tournament and deal with all of that, which that's not people being unfair by any means. But it's obviously a lot of people, A, in the galleries, and B, it's much louder than most golfers are going to have to deal with out on the course.
And his response to being asked about playing, like, are you scared to be playing with Tiger? And he said, well, he's not going to come up and punch me, so no, you know?
And I would probably take Koepka in a Tiger-Koepka fight, even though, you know, Tiger once upon a time was certainly lifting heavy. He probably hasn't recently because of that back injury. But I think what Koepka was able to do was phenomenal. I mean, obviously, the first two rounds, he made history with the lowest score ever in a major in those first two. And then while DJ's making a surge and he has four bogeys in a row, to then be able to kind of calm himself down, level out, and then still go on to win, and obviously DJ, some can say, choked. Mm-hmm. I just think Koepka needs to get just all the credit for what he was able to do on one of the biggest stages again, right? I mean, I understand people know the names of Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler more than they know Koepka's. Hopefully that, though, has changed now. Hopefully this PGA Championship has changed that narrative because he is deserving. I mean, he's number one in the world. If you don't know who he is now and respect his golf game, when will you?
Do people hate him?
I don't think so. I think his personality makes him hard to love.
Because
he's very dry. He shows no emotion. He's very much like Jason Duffner, who has no personality. But he's extremely real, so he'll answer a question, but not have funny, not joke around. You know, you don't really see that enthusiasm from him like you do with, you know, the golf buddies of Spieth and Thomas and, you know, Fowler and all that. But I think it's for the fact of not that he's only won majors, but essentially that's what he does. And he's admitted that he doesn't get up for the other tournaments.
I heard on the drill they mentioned that he says holes like, what is it?
Yeah, he wishes he would only be
14 or 9 through. Yeah. I mean, there's a chunk of that he wishes they only played 14 or something like that.
Which, you know what? Props to him because I don't blame him. I get bored too.
Yeah. It is so interesting though because that comment right there, the fact that he said, you know, I space out between 7 and 12 and honestly, I wish the course was about four holes shorter. That's really hard to say, by the way. Because it doesn't fit the parameters of like what people think like professional athletes should be, and that's completely dedicated to their sport and zoned in and focused all the time. He can go out and win a PGA championship, and maybe that came back to bite him a little bit on Sunday when he didn't play so well, but still won.
Right.
And they can say things like, yeah, I don't even remember those last four holes or the, you know, four holes before that. And I think it drives, that's how good they are. And I'm like you, Donna. I appreciate when people are their truest and realest selves in all this and, you know, admit at times when they're human beings, because we do, we put them on this pedestal and think they're the greatest thing. And all they do is eat, sleep and breathe whatever sport there is. And sometimes we think that's how they should be, but the reality is they have flaws and are human beings just like the rest of us. So I can appreciate stuff like that.
Well, I think it shows how calm he is. If he really, truly for those holes, he's not overthinking anything. He's just playing and he's like, all right, here we go, next hole. I think that shows that he's able. And he said this about, he's brought this up on our show. He basically said, when I go into a major, I know I'm better than half the field. And then the next group is going to overthink it and they're going to feel overwhelmed. And then the next group, I'm just physically stronger than, you know, and he whittles it down. Like, I only really have to beat a few guys. Well, I think that shows his greatness, that he's able to kind of break it down and also to remain so composed on these just gigantic stages.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if y'all are like this, but when I watch golf, Donna, you watch a lot of golf. When I watch golf, if there's a guy that I really want to win and he has important putts, it's less driving the ball for me, but it's more the putts.
Uh-huh.
I get nervous, like physically nervous watching and knowing how much is on the line with a ball that can only go, you know, a few inches one way or the other in order for them to make that putt. And I get nervous. I can only imagine what it would be like to be them. And especially, like I said, if you're playing when there's a huge crowd around.
Like, I'll hold my breath, especially. Like, ooh, you know, do that kind of reaction. But I wasn't rooting against him, but I was really, because he had such an enormous lead, I wasn't sad by the four bogeys. And
you wanted drama.
It makes it more exciting.
I did. I wanted a playoff. I was like, I'm all game. I don't care who wins. I want to see something great, because that's what made the players so great this year. Jim Furyk was just, I mean, so close. It was so exciting. And by the way, I appreciate you, Golf Channel and TNT and CBS, that when they showed up the majors this year, the players was always involved. Thank you.
They
always
it?
Had the players up there. Yes. Hmm. So thank you very much.
The other video, outside of the one where the crowd was chanting DJ and such, was the kiss that did not take place, that tried to take place with Jenna Sims, who you've all probably seen at this point, tries to walk up to Brooks Koepka before his, I think, final round starts to try to plant one on him real quick to give him a kiss, a good look. And he absolutely, like, turns the other way and is like, nope, not happening. This, to me, I can tell you right now, I try not to use the word never, but this was one of the, like, Daniel never obviously played professional sports, but played Division I baseball. And I knew on game days, especially days that he was starting, that it was like I was kind of like non-existent. And I was totally fine with that. I mean, I gave him his space to get into his zone. I tried not to cause any kind of drama between the time he got up and whatever time he left for the field. He had his routine. He had his things. I knew certain conversations that we were not going to have on the days that he would pitch. So this is absolutely one of those things where I'm like, yeah, what are you doing? Like, he's in the zone. He's focused. Back off. Let him be. And then you can kiss him as she did afterwards. Am I the only one who felt like that was absolutely like the perfect response for that situation?
For, yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless they have a routine and that and he veered away from it, I don't know. But I completely agree with you. This is not about you today, sweetheart. Go away. You know, stop.
There's no chance, knowing his personality and how in the zone he gets, that she should have gone for the kiss with the cameras there too. Like the camera's right there. So maybe that's why she was doing it, is because she wanted to show all these ladies like, this is my man.
Right.
But
no,
I would have
I think you're exactly right.
So embarrassed if I had been like, oh, okay, talk to the hand, basically, like on live television. And then it affects her briefly because she makes a face and then she starts walking in front of him, no longer next to him.
Well, she's asked about it.
And then, right, her response is great and perfect. But I don't think that was how she was feeling in that moment.
She said, I'm so not discreet. I'll just wave and he'll tip his hat. I'll blow him a kiss. I'm not trying to be too low key. If I see him and he sees me, I'm like, hi, which is an interesting way to respond to all this. Either way, I thought it was pretty funny.
It's boyfriend, girlfriend, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
For how long?
That part I did not read.
Is she, now her last name's Sims, is she Sims family?
I don't think so.
Is she with Goofy Laugher, Chris Sims?
I don't think so. Think they've been together since he won the majors last year, so I'm going to guess at least a year.
Okay. Hmm.
But either way, I just think that also behavior I would not do on the golf course. Hi!
No.
Like, that's totally fangirling.
We've talked about this, right? Yes, it is. We've talked about this before, identifying yourself as the boyfriend or the girlfriend or the wife mm-hmm. of the athlete and wanting to like fade into kind of the crowd. I prefer the latter of the two because, again, I tended to be a bit of a psychopath when Daniel was on the mound and I was pacing. And with Jackson, if he's in net, I go and hide in a corner. You know, try to stand in a corner, partly because I don't want some parent saying something rude about my son. And then I'd get into a fist fight at the thing and it'll be this whole thing. And so I don't know that I'd want people to know at the beginning, like, oh, there she is. Now, there are some who want that camera right on.
Sure.
Oh, this is Brooke Koepka's girlfriend. Let's get her reaction. So
she is gorgeous and she has great
hair. Yeah. I mean, is there a golfer who doesn't have a great looking girlfriend?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Why?
Because apparently she knows.
Is there one?
No, I mean, I don't want to ever say that a woman's this like heifer or ugly. Regardless of who their spouse is.
Golfers probably pull some of the best looking women. They do. And they're not bad looking. There's a bunch of attractive golfers.
Miranda Lambert has a line of clothing, and one of the t-shirts is like wild heifer, and that's what stuck in my head.
I haven't heard that word heifer used in a long time.
Well, I've heard it. And it was on a t-shirt.
All right. How far would you go for a job? Would you go as far as standing outside with a sign? Plus, Lauren Brooks has some competition in the smarts department. That's next.
Helmets and heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes,
presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products
on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Former Missouri defensive lineman Jordan Harold hasn't played in 2 years after finishing his career at Mizzou, where he started as a Division II player before transferring. He earned a walk-on spot. He's one of those Cinderella stories that we all like to follow. But his kind of came to an end after his college career did not turn into an NFL one, except the fact that he's still trying to get into the NFL. He showed up at the Carolina Panthers Bank of America Stadium with a sign in his Missouri jersey saying, "Will pass rush for hot wings." Now, at the risk of sounding like this mean, witchy person, stuff like this is really kind of like awkward, I think. Like, the local news picks it up and then it floats around. It's like, right. Hey, give this guy a chance. Think about it for just a minute. Think about going, pretend there's somebody at TIA Bank doing this. These guys are showing up, headed to OTAs, walking through the parking lot, and here's this guy standing at the fence like, hey, I'd love to come try out for your team. Look at my son. Like, this is, like, really uncomfortable and awkward for me.
Well,
I don't like this.
This is what...
Yes, because I'm like, I think it's probably time to let it go.
This is what I would do. If you want to put yourself out there, I am going to record you trying out and see how well you can do.
Yes.
So then your embarrassment can walk out the door and everybody has seen it.
Now, that's harsh.
That's what
harsh.
I would do.
Wait,
or if he is a star, then you look great and he made the team.
Yeah. I don't think you have to embarrass him. It's
nope.
just like,
I would embarrass
what is happening? Like, you haven't played in 2 years. You're undersized, 6 foot two, 265. This was his senior year stuff. Again, 2 years from now, it's like,
you can't be around
really
somebody who's desperate.
That's it.
You do not
nailed
like,
it. No, it, like, it's uncomfortable and it's weird. It's like the person who asks out the girl like 4 or 5 times and it's like, no, this isn't, no, whatever. And it's like, well, maybe if I stand outside her window, or maybe if I put these love letters on her car and just keep trying. It's like, no,
hold the boombox.
I think it's
above
time
my
to
head.
Move on.
There are love stories where the guy
yeah.
or the girl has asked several times and they stay friends for a long time and then eventually it turns into love and true love. Love, true love. But I think
what
I
movie
think
is
this
that
is
from? Oh, from Princess Bride.
Princess Bride,
yeah.
Good call. I think this is fabulous because he's showing the team how much he wants it and he feels like he can contribute. And mm-hmm. no, he wasn't the greatest pass rusher in college because obviously if he was, he would be on an NFL roster or at least would have been a part of the draft. But this is a guy who's literally, I think he's using, you know, the sign about the hot wings to jokingly say, like, I just need a chance. That's mm-hmm. what I need.
So I'm not sure sign that should say that. I just need a chance.
Little pass rush for hot wings.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like maybe try to get an agent to or somebody to help you with your film or so. I don't know. Like Timmy hanging out outside the. I know there's been these stories before,
yeah,
and I can't recall. Like,
I think there was one with the Bills.
Slept in their car outside the stadium and didn't have a thing, and he, but you know, great. Like this is like no, please stop. This is stalker-esque.
I think even Jalen Myrick. There was a story surrounding
maybe
him
so.
About,
yeah,
about
yeah.
The
that's
car
right.
And
that's
stuff.
Exactly
but there's
right.
been other teams that, and I don't know how long the player ends up lasting with the team, but I know there's been other guys who kind of showed up and have done this before. I love it. You know what? All you're asking is, and all he's asking for is a chance, and the team can learn, I think, somewhat quickly whether they want to keep him
yeah, but
around
they don't have
or
time
not.
For that.
Sure.
Again, this is that awkward, like, you've been out of the game for 2 years now. There's a reason you didn't get picked up between now and then. Please don't stand out here
but
and make this awkward. And don't wear your college jersey hanging out in the parking lot. Like, that's weird.
What if he has this excellent pass rush move and just, it was
he
was buried at Missouri and nobody saw it and he has
oh, wait, Missouri's in the mighty SEC now. How could he have ever gotten buried? Because Missouri is ridiculous.
I mean, I don't see why
Missouri beat Florida last year, so
I don't see why you're dissing right. my idea. It gets him in the door, gives him a chance, and if he stinks, it's been recorded. He's out the door, so no one else will give him a chance. Or if he's great, then he makes the team. How's mine?
I think Donna, I think you're just
bad
being
idea.
Mean.
I'm gonna record you so you can see if you're good or bad.
I hope this kid makes the team, and I hope that
we all eat our words for it, and feel
not so
bad
much
about
eat your words,
rude.
But I hope that you understand the extreme measures he's taking in order to...
Desperate. You can say it, desperate.
In order to make a dream a reality.
Maybe and Leon can give him some advice about being a lemon pepper guy.
That's right.
Oh, with the Hot Wings connection. Yes. Sure. Speaking of dreams, some people dream to go to prestigious universities like Harvard, and a lot of people don't end up making there. Except for this one kid out of Kansas, whose name is Braxton Morrill. Braxton Morrill is 17 years old. Graduating high school, right? You probably think this story is going down the road of he got into Harvard and it's like the first kid from his small town in Kansas
right.
where nobody goes and does anything or whatever. No, not the case. He's 17 years old. He's going to graduate from high school. And then, oh, by the way, 2 weeks later, he's going to be receiving his undergraduate degree from Harvard. When he was 11 years old,
mm-hmm.
his parents enrolled him in the online version of Harvard. And he earned...
There's an online version
yes, there's
of
an
Harvard?
Harvard Extension School is mostly for non-traditional learners, be it someone with a job or who's not in the age range of a typical college student. Most courses can be taken online, but Extension School students also must earn 16 credit hours in person on the campus. Where he did, and he majored in government with a minor in English. And he is, this local news story... Oh, I originally found this from News4Jax, by the way. Found this and then called to make sure. Listen, are you? This is for real. Called Harvard and someone confirmed that, yes, he will be graduating.
What's his last name?
His last name is Morrill.
So Braxton Morrill will be our president in 20 years. Is that what you're saying?
Possibly. Well, there's got to be more than that because I think you have to be 42 to be president, right? Don't you have to
well,
be
see,
in your 40s?
See, that's why I didn't go to Harvard online.
I will say that.
How do you feel about that, Lauren Brooks?
Braxton was my grandmother's maiden name. And so there are several members of my that side of my family named Braxton. Okay. So I will say that. So maybe
Tony
we are
Braxton.
Related.
I can't. I mean, my son is 10.
Yeah.
And there are times he walks out and he's got like barbecue sauce on the side of his face. And his he has those like Nike socks that say L for L and R for the right. And he's got them on opposite feet. And he's a smart kid. And I'm like, I cannot imagine him and close to that age being like so advanced, Doogie Howser-esque, that I'm like, you know what we should do? We should enroll you in Harvard online.
Oh, Doogie Howser-esque. I wonder if all the millennials.
What a great
that,
show right? that was.
Yeah,
did you watch
I mean,
it? Did you watch Doogie Howser?
I know I've seen it in the past. I know.
God, I love
the
Gibby, do you know who Doogie Howser is?
I have heard of it, but I cannot tell you that I've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, shame. I think there's something to be said, and I'm in this category. I have not a photographic memory by any means, but that is how I remember. I'm a visual learner. Mm-hmm. And if you have me read a paragraph, like in a magazine, this just happened over the weekend. I read a paragraph in the magazine, and then I remembered to tell Brian about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's this one part of the magazine, this place that I went, I thought it was a restaurant. Anyway. I was like, Brian, it's on the left-hand side of that paragraph. Like, I remember exactly where the what I thought was a restaurant.
Right.
Not to be. But anyway, that part doesn't matter. But I remember it was on the left-hand side of the paragraph. So stuff like that always
sure.
helped me to study. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the category of I'm really not all that smart, but I'm really disciplined about studying. And I have a visual memory, I mm-hmm. feel like I learn things in sequential orders. And I can always remember stuff because of where it was on the page, which sounds weird. But either way, I'm not... The point of it is I'm really not that smart in real life. I just made really good grades because I knew how to study. Mm-hmm. And so this kid may be one of those, which is he may not have any sort of common sense. He may not have any sort of idea of how the world really needs to work, but he may just really know how to study. And it sounds like that he has that excellent memory and excellent vocabulary.
What do you do when you're 17 and you've already finished college?
Go get a job.
I think you go continue school. And you then become either a lawyer
you've already done
or an accountant
schools.
Or a doctor.
Yeah.
Well, a veterinary, you know, you
I mean,
because you're really good at school, you just keep continuing school.
Can't even like go have a beer to celebrate.
Says someone who
finished.
Likes
I mean,
study.
I guess you can. He said he's also publishing a book called Harvard in the Heartland about his experience as an intellectually gifted boy from a small farming town in western Kansas.
We'll hear his name again in how many years?
I don't know. That'll be now. I hope this isn't one of those things that was just made up. Like they did the online school and the parents just did all the work for him, and it turns out to be a big hoax. Surely not,
that's
right?
Awful.
Well, you have to question it because there's lots of fake news out there, Donna.
You
these
know,
days,
that is true with the celebrity parents getting them in their school.
Yes,
and stuff like that. Yeah.
Who, by the way, I think pled guilty, and I don't know.
That story kind of ran its course, and I haven't heard from it.
Well, that's where we live, and the good news is, if anything ever like you do anything. That you get busted for and you become this laughing stock. Don't worry, like wait 12 hours.
Right.
You'll be old news. Somebody else yep. will have done something even worse to begin with. I learned something about Lauren Brooks today, Donna Murphy, that surprised me, and I'm curious if it surprised you. With regard to graduation, it's May. People are walking and commencement speeches and all those things, and it's this proud moment. You might be surprised to know Lauren Brooks did not walk in her college graduation. That shocked me.
Were you bitter because you weren't valedictorian? So did you refuse to walk?
I was not. I don't have a lot of patience. And I knew there were so many people graduating from the College of Business at the University of Florida that I said,
nope,
no thank you. And I kind of thought high school graduation was a little bit cheesy for me personally. Like, I just thought it was like, all right, whatever. And they tried to force us to wear pantyhose also at the high school. And
what? Oh, you
that.
Went to a private school, though.
Yeah.
Force you to wear pantyhose.
Yeah,
in Florida of all places.
I know. But so.
Gross.
I thought it was going to be, no offense to people who walk, because I think that's a great thing. If you graduate and you want to walk, by all means, I think you should. just me personally, I thought it was going to be a giant waste of my time. Like, my parents were going to have to come and sit through hours of this graduation. And I understand there are great commencement speakers and all, and that part you might learn from. But I just didn't feel like it was anything that was going to truly change my life or benefit me. And I was able to already come back to Jacksonville and start looking for a job. So I thought that was kind of the smartest thing and not, I don't know.
No, I'm not surprised at all. Plus, how many
what?
Are in
You're
your
not
class?
Surprised at all?
No, because, I mean, your class, your graduating class at UF
Thousands.
Is what? Yeah.
Thousands.
This isn't, you know, 400.
So they just mail you your diploma?
Yes.
So you don't have a cap and gown? You don't have...
No.
Oh, do they wear blue cap and gowns at Florida? Are they...
Good question.
You have no idea?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
There wasn't social media back then. This was 2004, so
do you,
I don't... I didn't care either.
Do you keep your college cap and gown?
Yeah. It's something you buy, and they give you the tassel.
I know,
and
it's something
you... throw your hat in the air.
I've never been into that kind of pomp and circumstance, though.
Okay,
and so I get it... I understand why it's necessary
pompous
and why it's a
Lauren
good thing.
Rue,
yeah.
You.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss 4.75.
She's pompous. I'm just saying
you did want to be acknowledged and have
like,
walk
okay,
across.
Okay, Jonathan thing. Agrees with me. He didn't go to either, or he didn't.
Yeah,
go.
But this isn't about Jonathan.
Oh, he had two.
This
either
is not about the person who still to this day has this vendetta against the person who beat her out for valedictorian at her high school. I thought for sure. She would and got like literally. What did you get as your? I mean, your GPA is over 4 point, right, from college? Is that a thing, or is that high school?
4.0 is the highest in college.
Okay, well, I thought that either
high
way,
high school it can
be
high over because of weighted.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
And I don't have a personal vendetta. I just feel like
you got screwed.
She should have had to take geometry honors our freshman year and not repeat algebra 2 honors. I think that's too easy. You shouldn't repeat a class and get the same weight. But anyway, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is everybody is free to choose whether or not they want to walk. And I
no,
can understand.
Everybody is. I was just surprised that you did not
as
walk.
As a former cheerleader who enjoys pictures and that those
telling
types of
at
attention, is that what you're saying?
She enjoys
I enjoy
putting
attention?
Makeup on and doing her hair.
Oh,
I can
I
see that, that part would appeal to you. And you had a lot of friends you wanted to walk with and your then boyfriend.
You know
guessing?
What? You know what? We graduated because we were in two. This was our parents were so annoyed at this. Our graduation was the same day, but they split the ceremonies. So the journalism and broadcasting class or department was in a separate one from the business one. So our families ended up going to both, which was awful. Ugh. Yes.
Why'd you make them go to both?
We didn't make them do anything. We said, you don't have to go. But they chose to go. So
well, see, I got no comment since I went to a broadcasting school. So my week's worth of schooling just ended in a, here's your certificate.
Well, but to the point of graduation, do you think that kids should graduate from kindergarten and have graduation when they graduate from first grade and third grade and sixth grade?
I am going to my son's graduation from kindergarten on Thursday.
And
so.
Do you like
well, some
it?
Of that's
do you think
okay. I mean, like, the kindergarten one's kind of cute,
well,
but my kids didn't have
for
that.
For JT, because we had to go through ABA and speech therapy and all of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a big deal,
for
right?
For me, when they had their little graduation ceremony from VPK, that meant more because of the road he took. He's
okay.
been in school since he was 2.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. So, I mean, it's cute. It's fun. You know? I hope they don't have one for every year.
Well, they don't, but I mean, there's one for
kindergarten.
I know for
sometimes.
Me, there was the eighth grade, and then there was the high school. So I was over it by that college point.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of cute and fun, you guys have a fun event on Friday with the Walk Off Charities event that we're going to give away tickets for. But tell us what's going on Friday, Lauren.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have 11 local restaurants and Bluebell ice cream. So you can eat everything that you want and have ice cream to boot. And then concessions will be open for drinks as well. We are going to have the gates open at 5:30 at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. We're going to give away a 4-pack of tickets right now to the first pitch. It's the 3rd annual. And it's a whole lot of fun. And then right around 6 o'clock, the celebrity home run derby will begin.
Will you be participating?
I will not because I will still be on air.
Oh.
Because
are there any females participating?
Yes, Allie McDeal is a participant for the second year in a row. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And so she will be swinging for the fences alongside lots of other media personalities, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We do it, like I said, this is our 3rd annual, and we do it to raise money for Walk Off Charities, which, of course, helps local youth learn to play baseball who otherwise couldn't. So caller number 4 right now, 641-1010. Gibby's a pro at this. you will win the tickets.
All right. We say goodbye to Andrew Gibson with that and welcome in Matt LaVey. Plus, second chances. Do you believe in them? That's next.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
We welcome Matt LaVey into the program. Matt, I'm assuming we got a caller number four for those four tickets to the First Pitch event with four walk-off charities.
Yeah, that we did. Larry, our lucky winner today.
Lucky Larry was our winner today.
Apologize to Larry. I called him Jerry a couple times.
Ooh.
So.
Did you ever watch Parks and Rec?
But yeah, I'm a big fan.
Jerry, whose real name was Gary, and they it's one of the greatest things to come out of that
throughout
show.
The whole show, that always so cracked me up.
I'm with you on that.
Just alerted Lauren to the John Rahm peeing on the course. Did you see the video of John Rahm peeing at the PGA Championship?
No.
So if you Google it, you'll find it. It's on Twitter. But DJ hit a shot in the rough. And so the camera's behind DJ as he's walking to his ball. And you see Rahm running for the trees in front of DJ. And he just turns and he's peeing clear as day. I mean, he's not peeing towards you, so you're not seeing anything graphic. But you clear as day. And I haven't heard anything about this from the PGA.
Interesting.
I'm stunned as I think he is there a fine for that? Especially being caught on TV. I don't know, but it's quite funny. I enjoy it.
That's one of the benefits to being a man right there.
Yeah.
You can just like pop in the woods and nobody cares and it's like moving along.
One of my friends actually sent that in a group chat. I thought that was a joke until I actually saw like replays of it on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a joke at first, but
it was hilarious.
Weird.
Yep.
Not that
gotta
I'm opposed
say the
to
first
peeing
time
in the woods
ever,
if you have to pee in the woods.
The first
allegedly,
time I've ever seen
maybe.
That though.
Yeah. I feel like John Rahm probably could have orchestrated this a little better.
Right
there are cameras
front.
Everywhere, so make sure you kind of look up, look around, and then maybe you won't be caught.
So funny.
I have a family member who hikes a lot, right? And she was always trying to figure out the best way to go to the bathroom in the woods and not have to, like, take her pack off and all this stuff. So she found this device called the Go Girl. And,
I've heard of this.
And so you actually remain standing while
like
using
a funnel.
Correct, while right. using that instrument to use the restroom. Well, her husband comes home and he knows nothing about it and he goes into the bathroom and his wife is, all he can see is the back of her and his wife is peeing standing up.
But and she's at home? Why is she using it?
Because she just got it and so she was testing it out before she ever took it out on the trails.
Funny.
And her husband comes in and has like a mini heart attack real fast.
Interesting.
Because he's like, what did I not know about you? And then, yeah. So they make stuff for that. Moving along.
Moving along, making the transition from urine talk to baptism is very fluid. And that's where we'll go with that pun somewhat intended there. So Kareem Hunt, who back in 2017, the altercation with the woman in the hotel, and it was the TMZ found the tape and it was this whole thing. And during the middle of last season, the Kansas City Chiefs were made aware of it, allegedly. And we know the story from there. He was then put on the commissioner's exempt list and then they let him go. And then now he is in Cleveland, where last Sunday he chose to go get baptized at True Vine Baptist Church. And John Dorsey, who's the Browns general manager and the head coach, Freddie Kitchens, showed up and surprised him to support him in his kind of rebirth, if you will, to start over this new life and be, in his words, born again. Second chances. Is this an example where you guys are willing to give a second chance to someone who is seemingly taking maybe the appropriate steps to get their life in order?
So for me, we always use that phrase, everyone deserves a second chance.
And, which I don't think is always true.
And I don't think, that applies to everyone. And I certainly don't think it should apply to young men who make horrible decisions, not mistakes, but horrible decisions, and then still end up earning millions of dollars because they get to play the game of football. Kareem Hunt, I don't put in the category of he did something so egregiously bad that he should be kicked out of the league forever. I don't put him in that category. I think what Kareem Hunt did is the result of women in our generation and the younger generations are far more aggressive than women have ever been. Men have always been taught you never hit a woman. But men have also not been around women who are aggressively coming at them. And I think that we're starting to see more and more of that, that women are kind of breaking that barrier. And it's still not right to do anything physically violent towards a woman, but a woman's attacking you and she won't leave you alone. I put that in a different circumstance than a man physically being violent towards a woman, especially one that he's supposed to protect. So Kareem Hunt, I don't put in the category of he should be kicked out of league forever. I think the baptism thing and then the fact that the team, certain coaches surprised him is awesome. On Sunday, Brian and I got to be a part of his niece's baptism and my cousin's baptism, separate events. And I loved both sets. One was young people and one was, well, I say young, like children. And then one was a woman in her 20s. And regardless of what age you are and what faith you have, I think to support someone who firmly believes that that's the next step in their faith is an awesome thing, regardless of how you feel about it. So I applaud him for taking those public steps and certainly for trying to go down a path that's going to make not just his career, but his life hopefully better.
I don't think I can top anything she just said. I mean, Lauren said everything perfectly from exactly, you know, putting him in that position in that kind of category, that of course he deserves a second chance with his circumstances. And, you know, the team showing up is a great thing, which means they support him as well, because someone like him in his situation can feel kind of ostracized from that community. So I think it's great. I think it took a lot for me as a dog lover, as a pet lover, to give Michael Vick a second chance, because that was that was excruciating to hear the details and see the photos and everything like that.
Right.
But he went down a path, and he took a while, but he went down a path and he made it right. And now it's like, okay, would I, you know, I don't know if I would trust him with my dogs, but, you know, but still at least it's not someone that I would run up and you know, yell at or something like that.
I think this is great if this is the direction Kareem Hunt believes his life needs to go in. I'm also very much a wait-and-see person because there are lots of people who, and I'm not saying this is his particular situation, but will use the religious card, if you will, to say I'm changed and I'm different. And well, he's a Christian or she's a Christian. They wouldn't have done that or whatever religion you want to insert there. And that could not be further from the truth sometimes. One is not exclusive from the other, in my opinion. So I hope Kareem Hunt makes the right decisions and proves the Browns right for giving him the opportunity for a second chance, if you will, and keeps his nose clean and makes decisions that I think he should have made in turning away whether the woman was violent toward him or not. In my opinion, he should have walked away, walked right back into that room and shut the door and then called Hillsdale Security. He had so much more to lose in that scenario, but it seems like he's on the path or the beginning of the path to making the right choices in life or the choices that are right for him.
Yeah, I wonder if the Chiefs wish that they didn't release him. I mean, the video certainly.
Can you imagine, though, if they had him and Tyreek Hill on the.
Well, but that's, I guess, my point is you're right now Tyreek Hill is still in your roster, and I think he's done
they lied.
Far worse
things.
Oh,
agreed. But, I mean, I think the idea was that he lied to the Chiefs about all this. And so it was one of those situations where they had to cut bait.
Yeah, and I think teams, it's okay also to react because you're afraid of what the public outcry is going to be. It just shocks me that the public outcry in Kansas City isn't louder for Tyreek Hill to have already been released.
Right, and I actually texted Brooke just to, you know, what's the latest, and I think it's just all trying to be sorted out because Crystal, the fiance and mother of this child, is also, I mean, it's a mess, and it's a mess that nobody wants to have to ever have to go through or deal with or report on in Brooke's case, that's for sure. So Cleveland, the city of, for just a moment, this broke across Twitter earlier, and I don't think it's officially been released yet, but the draft in 2020 will be in Vegas, only to be followed up by what is being reported as Cleveland for the 2021 draft. You talk about, like, what if your work's like, we can't send you in 2020, but by God, 2021, you are on the first flight. Not
that
I've ever been to Cleveland.
What if that happens for the drill?
Yeah, that could be. No, they've already tried to, they've found their way in, I think, a spot to Vegas, but that's kind of a letdown, isn't it? I shouldn't say that. I've never been to Cleveland, but.
Don't you know Cleveland rocks?
It did. I used to watch the Drew Carey show.
Yep, me too.
I've been to Cleveland. I went for a wedding years and years ago, I was very surprised after having been to cities like, and I'm not comparing Chicago and Cleveland, but cities even like Cincinnati and Boston and just bigger cities up north, I assumed that the downtown was a fun happening area, certainly unlike ours, and ours is striving to make changes to be a much more populous area. But I just assumed Cleveland's would be like that as well. But I was there at night and there was no one around. So it was a much more industrial, like corporations by day and jobs by day.
And it's going to be
nothing
cold
at night. So,
right? The drafts in February?
Drafts in April.
April. What's this?
Still thinking, be cold.
Yeah. But yeah, it'll still be a little chilly. So that's interesting, but it makes me hopeful that Jacksonville could get the draft. I thought that once it went to Nashville and then certainly followed by Vegas next year that it had grown too big for Jacksonville. But if Cleveland can have it, why can't we?
Oh, I don't want Jacksonville to have it yet. Later, when downtown is built up, that's when Jacksonville should have it.
Sure.
It would just be another embarrassment.
Well, a couple years.
Which is what Cleveland
least.
Might turned out to be.
What do you mean another embarrassment?
When the Super Bowl was here. You know, it's just everybody complains about it. There's nothing to do here. Downtown is desolate. You know,
once they have hotel rooms.
Yeah. Once
but
they
that's
build it
different.
Up. Yeah. Once they build it up, it'll be, you know, especially with Daly's place, it's going to be rocking and it'll be wonderful to have it here.
Well, I mean, if the plans go according to plan, then I would think at least 2 years is enough to make significant headway.
Well, in terms of bachelorette parties colliding with the draft, I think everyone's safe for 2021 if they're getting married that year. I don't think Cleveland is a destination for bachelorette parties.
I've always heard it referred to as the mistake by the lake.
Yes.
So, if that's the case,
and the weather, it will be cold.
Take with your marriage.
The weather is psychotic right now. It's 1,000 degrees here. Mm-hmm. It's snowing in Colorado. Mm-hmm. It's storms and flooding in the plains. In Oklahoma, they have shut down schools. It's just like psychotic everywhere. And it's like Chicago. The Cubs and the Phillies are playing right now. It's like 48 degrees out. That's freaking miserable in May and should not be the case.
Nope.
So I'm happy to be in sunny Florida. Zach Smith, for just a moment here, I stumbled upon this before the show started. He's the former assistant of one Urban Meyer, the crazy, I don't even know, alleged domestic abuser. I know that we talked about this quite a bit in the fall. Well, he's decided that he is on a warpath to right all the people who have wronged him. That's probably not the right word, but he's out for revenge. And he's telling people on this podcast that he's created called Menace to Society. He's creating this weekly podcast where he is calling out people he used to coach with. He's calling out Tom Herman, who's the head coach of the University of Texas, because of their past relationship. And it's so bizarre and train wreck-esque. And it's like the internet at times is made for good and podcasts are made for good. But then there's people like this who get this platform and are going to go on there. And what he's doing is more damage to himself, because that's what normal people do, right? Normal people go out and like say weird sex things about their former coaches that they used to work with and spread crazy news about them and are proclaiming that they're going to tell the truth, because that makes you look like a normal person.
So he's going to go with the, if I'm going down, you all are going down.
Yes, absolutely.
He's
I'm setting the record straight on the things that were, you know, reported about me that I served time for, but were was in trouble for, that actually happened, and here's what didn't actually happen. I'm going to, hell hath no fury. It's just, and I'm not going to lie, I'm slightly intrigued by it.
It's
a train wreck, and it's like, no, I shouldn't give that attention.
Nope.
Because he's a psychopath.
Yep.
So we'll see how long before podcast is being hosted, how long they'll let him hang with that and do that. All right. If you could change anything about the current state of the NFL, what would it be? Calais Campbell weighs in, and you might find his suggestion interesting. That's next. Welcome back in. Lauren Brooks, Lauren Rue with Donna Murphy and Matt LaVey joining us in the 7 o'clock hour, as he does. Andrew Gibson takes us from 6 to 7. And then Matt LaVey takes us through the home stretch. We all talk about ways to make the game better occasionally. Do you change overtime rules? Would you make an attempt to make the game safer. Well, as it is May, and sometimes storylines are hard to come by, Peter King from Pro Football Talk decided he would poll people who had something to do with the NFL, whether a former coach or a player or an owner or management, some umbrella, fit under the umbrella of the NFL, to ask them if there was one thing you could change about the current NFL, what would it be? Calais Campbell was one of the smart people, and that's the words he used to describe the people he asked when putting this together, about what he would change. And he says, make every healthy player active on game day. One rule change I'd like to propose is eliminating inactives on game day. If teams can dress and play all 53 guys on Sundays, it would help decrease injuries incurred during competition because it would allow more rest and more substitutions. If players are aware that there are more guys on the team than that can substitute in for a player or two, guys will be less inclined to remain in the game with an injury that could worsen with more time on the field. Sounds like he's speaking maybe from personal experience. A guy who played beat up a lot last year for sure. Overall, more players on the active roster would lead to better health for all players. Agree? Disagree?
That's why he's a smart person. I think that's brilliant. I wouldn't have thought of that one at all. I enjoy his take on that.
Yeah, it never made sense to me really as to why
what's
not
point?
Like that. Yeah. Hayes believes that because there are, and of course I believe him because he's very smart also, the NFL assumes that each team has a couple players that will be out for the game, so they're trying to level the playing field, which is why they knock it down to, 45? And so that's what he said. I believe that because otherwise it doesn't make sense as to why not all players can be active.
Yeah.
But I think as far as Calais Campbell goes, something tells me even if he's a little bit injured, he's still going to play through those injuries regardless of how many guys are active.
Right.
But there are other guys.
Yeah, it's a long season. And if you're active, if you're healthy, you're active and you should be available.
I mean, to me, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the main reasons is a monetary one. The NFL trying not to pay everybody. You get game day checks. If you make people inactive, do you not pay them?
You still pay them.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's not the... Or it can't be that reason. It can't be a fiduciary reason. But I liked his answer. And I think that obviously as the NFL focuses more and more on players' health, it's something they should
absolutely consider. No doubt. All right. Which one of these did you guys agree or disagree with strongly one way or the other?
I loved from Rick Goslin, who is a Hall of Fame voter. He used to cover the NFL with Kansas City and Dallas. And his was help defenses by extending the bump zone. So I read his description, and you have 5 yards with the line of scrimmage, and then afterwards the defenses can't touch you. You know, you put your hands on them, and then you get flagged. He said just extend it 10 yards instead of 5, have it 10. I'm like, I love that. I think that's great. That is helping the defenses because right now the game is tailored strictly for the offense. The defensive players have no luck right now, especially with attacking, getting after the quarterback. So I enjoy his take on this. Just move the bump zone up 5 yards. So now you have 10 yards. You guys can manhandle each other. And then after that.
Mine's pretty straightforward. Hunter Henry says ensure that each team gets a possession in overtime. He's the tight end for the Chargers that was hurt last year. I mean, to me, I think that just makes perfect sense.
What was it again?
Each team gets a possession in overtime.
Yeah.
They do, essentially. This is all stemming because of the
participation award. Yeah. Is that what I'm hearing?
No. It is all stemming because everybody's up in arms because the Patriots, they went into overtime. They did not have the ball. They intercepted the ball. They took it away.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go down and score. So how is that the teams not both having possession?
Well, I think it stems from farther back, just the NFL overtime in general. The first team that gets the ball has the chance to win. Obviously, it's
right,
sudden death.
Right,
and the other team doesn't get the offense of the other team doesn't get a possession.
So when the opposing team gets it, but then, say, the New England intercepts it and takes them away, do you automatically say, well, it's okay, here, have another shot?
Well, no, but both offenses, in my world, both offenses have a chance to have the football.
And what happens
at some
if it's intercepted?
Well, that's if the Chiefs throw an interception, that means they had the ball. But if the Patriots start off and they score a touchdown and the Chiefs never get a chance to do anything on offense, then that's where I have a problem with it. But the Patriots quarterback, Tom Brady, should get the chance at one point. And then also
the
Chiefs quarterback,
had the ball.
Patrick Mahomes. I'm not talking about that specific overtime. I'm talking about overtime in general.
Right,
both offenses need a chance to have the ball. It should not be that your defense only goes on the field, and then if the offense scores, the game is over.
So that's what I'm saying. Because this uproar, to me, has only occurred because of what happened in the AFC Championship game.
No, I think they've been talking about this rule for a long time.
Chatting, but because nothing ever comes to fruition, I feel like, unless something, you know, benefits New England, and then they got to take it away just because that's how it all the rules get changed, and that's what I see. But I never see, and I always would argue everybody with this. The Chiefs had the ball. New England took it away. What do you want to happen? They both had the ball.
Right.
So what happens when the defense does their job and takes it away? Do you automatically, I'm sorry, here, try
No, just
again.
As long as both offenses have a chance to possess the ball. If the Chiefs had never had the ball on offense, and that's a possibility also,
right.
That's where I disagree. That's not the way I think the game should end. I found it hilarious, by the way, Brandon Carr, an 11-year cornerback in the NFL, says that he thinks defensive backs should be able to hit a quarterback in the pocket by the legs. It should be able to take down a quarterback by the legs. Obviously, that was a rule that was enacted when Tom Brady's knee was taken out and he tore his MCL and ACL in 2008.
Rule
change. He's like, hey, I'm only 185 pounds. There's guys like Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger. They're 245 pounds.
Right.
They're hard to tackle. I need to be able to take them down by the legs. Hold on. The NFL is never going to reverse that rule. Those quarterbacks are worth so much more than any other player on the team most of the time. There's no way they're going to reverse it. But I found it hilarious that he's like, hell yeah, I need to be able to go after their legs for fairness.
The one that I thought was really interesting and has been I can't tell you how many times I have said this at home and other people. Sam Farmer of the Los Angeles Times, an NFL writer, says, adios, chain gangs. Mm-hmm. It's like, what are we doing? Why?
I love the chain gang.
Why? Right. It's theatrics. It's measuring it with, like, you know, getting it down to a fine science. It's waiting to see how are they short? Are they this? And on television, you know, we have the first down marker so we can see, but he'd like to get rid of it altogether, thinks it's just archaic and it's just for the dramatics and it's really silly and there should be a more efficient way of doing this.
I think Sam's silly.
But I will say this, if they get rid of the chain gang, they're going to have some indicator on the field so that teams know how far they have to get to be able to pick up the first down, right? There are guys who can see the guy standing with the
first
down
like,
marker.
Thank you.
Why can't we just have like a laser on the ground? Straight across.
Right.
Oh, did
but
it
like,
put it over?
How is that
going
to happen? Can you see it? On a flat surface, would you be able to see, you know, 20 yards down the field if you needed to?
I see what you're saying.
Get what I'm saying? It's not like.
Correct. Yeah. No.
In order to get a first down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. No. I think you need the first down markers.
Right.
And I think you need the.
And what would those like middle-aged old men do for jobs if they weren't running down and trying not to trip over the chains and then giving dirty looks to people who stand close to the sidelines?
Plus, there's that great Sam Cooke song called "Chain Gang" that I absolutely love.
That is a good song.
Her
I don't agree with
reference.
Dean Blandino, who thinks every play should be reviewable.
Oh, for the
well,
love of God.
Well, but he's saying is that would have taken care of the Saints-Rams.
Okay, I would have taken that. But
awful ending to that game.
How many reviews can you have? Then you open
up
everything.
Well, but he's saying you don't increase the amount of challenges that the coaches get. The coaches still have the two challenges.
Right.
And if they lose one, then.
But what about replay booth? Oh, wait, well, hold on.
But his point is more that the coach can throw his challenge flag,
mm-hmm.
and then he can throw it no matter what's just happened. And that's where I agree, because you've got things like missed pass interference, and you can't challenge what's not called on the field. But if you can make every play reviewable, then the coach, Sean Payton, can throw that flag and say, hold on. And then they review that particular one. But that's not going to slow the game down anymore because the coaches aren't getting additional challenges. So that's where I understood what he's saying. But the opposite spectrum, Pete Carroll, the head coach of the Seahawks, says
makes nothing.
He wants no instant replay whatsoever. Just take it away. Let the human element remain. I almost said human
Which
elephant.
I'm trying to.
If I had to choose between the two, if my options were both extremes, either every single view is replayed, or excuse me, play is reviewed, or the opposite, I'm taking the, and I don't, I'm
You're
not a big
Pete Carroll
fan. I'm not a real big fan of his, but I would rather take human error all day over somebody micromanaging every aspect of the game.
I'm trying to remember what happened with the Seahawks of why he would think that, because I don't recall a play.
What was it? Handed the ball off to Marshawn Lynch.
That's just a dodo move. But.
Have you guys seen, this is like totally not what we're talking about, but I saw a picture pop up. Have you seen the photograph picture that's floating around Twitter of Eli Manning and Daniel Jones, and it looks like the same person. Matt, you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I saw it last night when I was scrolling through Twitter. This. It's literally identical.
They are making the same scrunched up, kind of confused, like, who farted face, and they look like the exact same person.
Yeah, it's like this
squint
almost.
Oh, with their helmets
almost.
On?
Yes.
Oh.
They look like twin brothers. I'll retweet it at Lauren_Rue if you're interested. You can check it out. Also, if you're interested in winning a Peter Brook chocolate heel, now is the time for that. And Matt LaVey, as you do every single week, please give us a number of lucky caller.
Let's go with number 3.
Caller number 3, 641-1010, walks away with this week's Peter Brook chocolate heel. We're talking NBA players who need to let it go and Toy Story 4. That's coming up next. I'm going to punt on the radio one-on-one etiquette where you pay off the tees right away, because I learned something at the break that makes me question my friendship with the two of you and how I don't think we could ever share a house if we rented together, or if you invited me over for a sleepover or anything like that. These two freaks, Matt LaVey, keep their house in the summertime. I assume the summer as well.
Yeah, well, it feels like summer.
In Florida. At 78 degrees, you might as well have the heat on.
I mean, I would rather almost go just sit outside in the heat.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And then Lauren Brooks goes, well, at night we turn it down to 77. That is like my ultimate hell. My ultimate nightmare, my ultimate hell is sweating while I sleep. In the Rue house, it's at 73 during the day, and it gets as low sometimes as 70 at night. With
what
the
is
fans
your,
on.
What is your electric bill
right?
per month if you keep
my
it 73
is,
during the day?
I mean, it's not too bad.
Nobody's there during the day. Why would it be
Daniel's,
that low?
Daniel's there during the day. Remember,
but he's
he
out of
home.
Town some. Don't,
well,
do you turn it up then?
It never goes above 73. Absolutely.
Never?
Not very often. Now, in the Florida winters, which I'm a huge fan of, by the way, what we'll do is we'll bump it up. Enough to, like, we'll open the back doors, right?
Right.
And it's enough to cool the house off. And then we don't usually have to run the air conditioning at night in the winter because it cools
off
at night.
So do you ever put the heat on? Have you put the heat on this
past winter?
I think
we did it like a couple of times when it got like, when we had those freezes a couple of times. But I'm not kidding you. The anxiety that it gives me to think about how you guys probably lay in your sweat at night and you just don't. I'm going to give you $25 to turn your air conditioning
down. I
mean,
you and I are in the same air. It's a well-insulated house. So you keep it at 77. There's just
no
heat.
That is, you're the people that we come to your house and we're like sweating when we're sitting on your couch. You guys are crazy.
Honestly, you sit on our couch. If the air is on 77, it is chilly, and I have to go put on a sweatshirt.
She's cold right now. It's like 72 degrees in here.
Okay, 72 is too cold for me personally. I like it much warmer. Yes. Right now, it is 84 degrees outside. I just walked outside because it's freezing in here. Mm-hmm. There's a breeze blowing, and it's beautiful. It is gorgeous outside. I wish we could be doing the show like 100 yards to our east,
yes.
And we could do the show outside. I think that you sleep in what I call hotel weather. Hotel temperature.
Yes. So as a kid, the house that I spent, grew up probably from like fourth grade to like ninth grade in, was two story. And the upstairs, I think, was partly converted attic at some point because the air, it just wouldn't get very cool in our bedrooms. So my sister and I, we had like the playroom upstairs. So my mom bought me a window unit. And when my friends would come spend the night, I'd be like, well, I hope you brought your winter clothes, because we'd call it the tundra. I would turn that sucker on high and I have the fan on, and it was like the perfect sleeping conditions because I would freeze everybody out. But then, like, you get under your covers.
How did you sleep when you were pregnant? Weren't you overly hot then?
Yeah. I mean, but I was.
Did you crank it down to like 62?
The good news was, well, okay, I was big pregnant in the winter.
Okay.
So that wasn't, both my kids were born in January and February. So It gets cold in Oklahoma, and there wasn't this.
Okay, that's
different.
I
wasn't dying like I would be if I were pregnant in the summer.
Yeah, especially here. Yeah. So.
We had to get to that.
The first thing I do.
Expose these two women.
First thing I do when I walk into a hotel is go turn the thermostat up because it's freezing
cold
in there.
It's a good thing we didn't have to share a room at Army Navy because.
That is true.
I don't think we would have survived.
It was 27 degrees outside.
You were either going to freeze to death or I was going to murder you for making it be too hot or I was going to die of heat exhaustion.
It was so cold outside. How could you have wanted it to be cold on the inside?
I think I turned the heat off at night, too. I turned it down to where the heat wouldn't come on.
Oh, my gosh.
So note to self, if the heels go on the road, she gets her own room and you and I will be just fine together.
Sounds lovely.
There you go. All right, speaking of nightmares, Chris Broussard from ESPN. After the Warriors swept the Portland Trail Blazers, he called out Kevin Durant and says Kevin Durant and the idea that he is needed on this team, this has been the ultimate nightmare for Kevin Durant because this team obviously can go on and advance to the NBA Finals with or without him. Now, there have been so many people who have been critical of Kevin Durant ever since he left Oklahoma City and he jumped to the best team and yada, 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 and have questioned his... I mean, look, he's an amazing basketball player, but how valuable is he on a team that was already valuable to begin with? And that's expected for a guy who made the decisions he's made, plus for a guy who's a professional athlete. What baffles me is that Kevin Durant continues to take the bait, and he continues to respond, and he gets on Twitter, and he responds to Chris Broussard and says, "I see a little exaggeration there, buddy, my worst nightmare. You sure that this is the worst that it can get?" Now, again, Broussard didn't tag him in the tweet, so he had to at some point be alerted to it or search his name or whatever. Then this rando responds to Kevin Durant. When I say rando, I mean like Joe Blow with 25 followers and is like, "Hey, KD, we get it, right? You're a sensitive guy." And instead of just letting it go with his 17.5 million followers and all his money and all his championships, he comes right back after and says, "You right. Let me chill before my sensitivity flare up, you real one blow, bro." So it's less about Kevin Durant and his value to the Golden State Warriors, which is a conversation that can be saved for another time. It's more about, like, what is he doing? Like, you don't have to do this, Kevin Durant. You don't. You're just making this worse for yourself.
I like the fact that he responded. Here's this guy. He's bored right now. He can't play with his team. And in order to occupy his time because he's injured, he decides to go on Twitter and probably search his name, which if you had that many people tweeting about you, you might also do, not y'all specifically, but people in general, when there's that much publicity out there about you, sometimes you seek it out to see what people are saying. And I love that he came back and said, "You think this is my worst nightmare? I can get way worse than this." I love that. Yeah, I'm not able to participate right now with my team, but my team might also go win another title. And I love the guys I'm playing with, at least for this season. We'll see where he ends up if he leaves. But I love that he says, like, "Hold on, chill, everybody. This is not that bad. There are much worse situations to be in." And yes, he responded to somebody who is not necessarily a significant media person by any means. I appreciate that. He's taking the time for somebody who's sitting there behind their keyboard and feeling all powerful and saying, "Oh, yeah, we know you're sensitive." KD comes back and he's like, "Yeah, I'm super sensitive." Now, in the past, he has been, but maybe this is showing that he's relaxed a little bit. I like it.
Well, is KD the one that always had the
burner account?
Yeah,
and still does, I think.
So...
I don't think he does. I think he's now using his own account to respond to this kind of stuff.
I don't know. It's just to me, it just screams insecurities, and that's okay because we all have them, but
you don't see them from the male athletes.
I think people should just take the Twitter away, take the phone. Just don't respond in a time like this. It just makes you look worse. And you go and go on there and defend yourself. I think it makes it worse.
But when people, I'm not going to use the word attack me on Twitter because I think that's too strong. There's not usually that much as far as the animosity goes. But certainly people will tweet me things, whether they disagree or if I get something wrong. And I almost always respond to those people more than just when people respond saying, like, "Great job," and then I'll like it and move on. But when someone actually is either disputing something or disagreeing, then I actually will get into a conversation with them. Granted, I don't have 17.5 million followers, but I tend to engage more with that type of person. So I don't think this is out of the realm of possibility. And I think he's bored. And so he's using Twitter as his outlet right now. I got Katie's back.
You're one of the very few who does.
It's fine.
I got no opinion. I don't know which way to go.
That's all right. That's fair enough. All right. Now, I'm giving your moment here in the sun, Donna, for Toy Story 4.
Oh, 1 month ago.
And all its greatness.
1 month ago, before Toy Story 4, and the Toy Story empire ends and says goodbye. I'm extremely excited. I have already taken the day off.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, yes. Little Dude and I will be at the very first showing that day on the 21st of June, by the way, in case anybody didn't know. But I take Tom Hanks movies very seriously. Mm-hmm. And yes, I consider an animated Toy Story 4 movie a Tom Hanks movie. Because when you do hashtag Toy Story 4 on Twitter, do you know what pops up?
What's that?
A little Woody. Face of Woody. How do I say that?
I think you just
did. Know. You know what I mean. Because he plays the character. Right. So it's for me, it's all about that. And so this is actually going to be my very first movie with JT.
Mm-hmm.
So I have
Not your very first movie with your son.
Mm-hmm, at the theater.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have told him because I've known that this movie was coming out. And I'm not one to take a four-year-old to a theater, especially if he can't sit through a movie at home. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Feel free. And the husband did. And they've gone to many movies together.
Oh, okay. So it's not JT's first movie
no,
in a theater.
No. But I refused until I believed he was ready or until, you know what? Nope. Toy Story 4 will be our first movie.
Okay.
Because it's special. And I feel like it, you know, speaking of, there's a preview right there. So, yeah, so I've already given him the lowdown and the rules because I will not allow talking, which there should be no talking in a theater anyways. But I don't care if my soon-to-be 7-year-old is going to have questions. It's Toy Story. There should be no questions. And you sit down. You be quiet. We're not getting up, you know, unless there's an emergency.
Mommy, I have to go to the bathroom.
Mm-mm. I am serious over this.
Are you going to take TJ as well, your husband, so that way in case he has questions or needs to use the restroom,
no.
Daddy can go?
No, it'll be our first one. It'll be our first movie. And
buckle
feel bad.
Up, kid.
I feel bad because there's a lot of rules going into this fun time. But, yeah. Man, I'm excited. I am so excited. You don't want to be next to me on a Tom Hanks preview because I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited for you. When does the movie come out, you said?
June 21st.
And she's already taken the day off. What happens if you don't get tickets?
So a month from today.
As soon as they say, hey, buy them ahead of time, I'm purchasing them. I will be ready. We're getting there early. I will be ready.
All right. Very good. I want to make a clarification about something during our discussion of the rules you would change.
Yes.
And overtime and that whole debate, it got fast and furious in here.
Because I get angry.
And right.
I know.
We need to clarify something. Kansas City never got the ball in overtime. That's why it was such a big deal. The Patriots got the ball to start overtime and scored on their first possession. So that is where all that came from. There wasn't a turnover by Kansas City for New England to get the ball.
And what am I remembering?
I'm not sure.
We intercepted the ball.
I can't remember, but I know in overtime because that was the biggest complaint was that people wanted to see Patrick Mahomes in this high-flying offense and be able to get the ball.
All right, I got to do my research.
So,
I'm sorry.
No,
apologies.
That's okay. That's all right. I just wanted to clarify that because I know you were so passionate about it.
I am passionate.
Yes.
Do you take your kids to the movie theater?
Yes. They are pretty I have not been to the movie since we moved here, but they have gone in the past, and usually they're pretty good about it. And usually in kids' movies, it's okay because there's so many other kids in there that there isn't this, like, I don't know, Donna with Toy Story 4 might feel differently, but there isn't this, like, extreme. In fact, you know what? Maybe it's not a good idea if you go on opening day because it's not just your kids that you're going to have to, your kid you'll have to worry about, Donna. It is, like, the other ones that are in the theater that will be chit-chatting and
and they'll hear
annoying
from me.
You.
Well, I yell at people in the
you
theater.
You might just, like, try to get like a private showing of your own or at least rent the movie, maybe wait and rent the movie, which is probably not something you're able to do. But I have a feeling that you're going to be extremely annoyed with all the kids that are in the theater because you've never taken your kid to a movie and it's not just your kid you have to worry about.
Yeah.
Because there will be some parents who let their kids run up and down, run up and down the
aisles. And they'll hear it from me.
All right. Well, that's good.
So
yes, I've taken them to see the movies. Yes.
All right. Just curious. I, as y'all know, have not gone to the movie theater since January 2014, and the streak lives on. You
what
just
was
came
the
back.
Movie?
It was American Sniper, and my cousin
that was a
during
good movie.
It was a great movie. My cousin during the most intense part of movie.
Yeah.
When the gun is pointed at the little kid and they're not sure whether or not he's going to pull the trigger right. In that moment, she pulls out her pub sub and it's like crinkle, 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 crinkle. And we're all like
a pub sub into like, the
literally
movie
everyone else in the movie theater intense. Has their breath held because it's that intense moment. And she's eating while we are not sure if this poor little kid, I'm not going to say poor little kid, it ended up that he was covered in a bomb. Spoiler alert. There you go. That movie's 5 years old. You just got back from Stillwater.
Yes, I did.
How was the Oklahoma State baseball team in comparison when Daniel Rue played there?
They are better. The talent is not necessarily worlds better. That was the biggest thing. When Daniel played, they had lots of talent. They just could never put it together when it mattered. This team has struggled, but they have gotten hot as of late, and the Big 12 tournament starts this weekend. But we had a great weekend. It was a reunion. It was the last weekend at Allie P. Reynolds Stadium, which has been there for a bazillion years. They got this brand new $60 million facility they'll debut next year, which a little birdie told me it won't even be ready for the opening weekend, but that's okay. Either way, it was a reunion of former players that play. I mean, everybody was invited whoever played there. And we turned it into a big party fest for a couple of days. So it was a good time. We had a very
Sounds
nice
awesome.
Time. Thank you for asking, for sure. All right, that'll do it for us. Thank you to Andrew Gibson, who helped us out in the first hour. Matt LaVey for hanging with us for hour number two. We got a winner, Matt. Did I ask you that already for the Peterbrook Chocolate Heel?
No, we didn't go over the heel one yet. It was Steve, our winner for that.
Hooked up, Steve. Congratulations, Larry and Steve. Larry walked away with tickets to the first pitch event with the Walk-Off Charities. And then, Steve, we hooked up with the Peterbrook Chocolate Heel. For Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks, I'm Lauren Rue. Have a great rest of your evening. Stay tuned for Into the Night with Rick Ballew.